Support for WKAR is provided by Liberty Coin Service, now open with a new location in Frandor, offering gold buying and coin collecting services in one combined location for more than 40 years. LibertyCoinService.com. And by MSU Alumni Association, offering opportunities for networking, career services, and community involvement with MSU alumni in your area and across the country. Alumni.msu.edu.
Current State on WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. Thanks for joining us. Reach us at currentstate@wkar.org. Well, January is the month for lofty pronouncements and urgent calls to action in both the State of the State and the State of the City addresses, and those and a few other related stories are what we'll explore in our Month in Review segment here out of the chute today, since we've already arrived at 1:31. It's 1:31:13. It's all ones and threes here at the end of the month. Here is a little sampling of what happened in January.
Once a year, we do the State of the State. It's a moment to stop and pause. It's a moment to stop and reflect on how we can use relentless positive action to continue the reinvention of Michigan.
I mean, I think most of us here are most upset about right to work. That's the biggest slap in the face.
Autos, agriculture, and tourism all are hitting on full cylinders, and it's a wonderful thing to see.
But there are a lot of issues I'm really frustrated about. As a woman, curtailing my reproductive rights, my access to contraception, is outrageous.
The winners of Car and Truck of the Year, the Cadillac ATS assembled in Lansing and the Ram 1500 assembled in Warren. If you want the best, you buy it from a Michigan product.
Also, I'm really concerned about the privatization of education in the state.
I, Barack Hussein Obama, do solemnly swear
that I will faithfully execute.
That I will faithfully execute.
I was disappointed in the president's proposal. If you look at all 23 recommendations, not one would have stopped Newtown. Not one.
Our own community has seen a rash of shootings, leaving one person dead and a dozen injured in just these first few days of the new year.
And I'll tell you right now, our clerks at the sheriff's office who do this day in and day out can spot them a mile away, but yet we have to end up issuing them permits.
You got a car, you're using the roads. You buy gas, you're using the roads. So it's about user fee increases to pay for this.
And then they're going to talk about raising taxes on vehicles and gas that directly affect those of us that have to commute from job to job. It's one thing after another on working families.
And I want to welcome to Current State the editorial page editor of the Lansing State Journal, Mickey Hurton, along with MLive reporter and Current State business contributor Angela Whitrock and Walt Sorg of the Lansing City Pulse. Great to have you all here this morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
We've been looking forward to this. And it's awfully convenient when so many newsworthy things happened the day before the segment. You're not racking your brains on what happened back on January 4th or January 5th, but we had a pretty busy day yesterday. One impactful thing that happened yesterday, just before the month is history, State Senator Gretchen Whitmer announced she will not be running for the Democratic nomination for governor. She cited her desire to spend time with her daughters. One is 9, one is 10 years old. Here is a part of her video announcement that appeared on her Facebook page.
You see, my girls are 9 and 10, and I really need to be here for them. The commitment to mount a successful gubernatorial campaign is going to require the time and energy like none we've ever seen before. And while I'm dedicated to the fight, I've concluded that I cannot be the Democratic leader, a great mom, and wage that fight in 2014 due to the age of my kids.
I'm really curious, were other Democrats waiting for this to happen, and will we be hearing from any of them soon?
Yes. And
okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Make it real simple. It's not quite as totally comparable to Hillary Clinton, but it was close. Gretchen is the candidate that had the fewest weaknesses to be attacked. She's never lost an election, for starters, which is a problem, say, with Mark Schauer. She's got somewhat of a statewide base, which is more than most of the other potential candidates would say. And I've known the Whitmer family literally since before she was born. And the reason she gave was the real reason. It wasn't because she was afraid of running against Steiner or afraid of a campaign. It really was about family.
It didn't seem calculated. I think given what we know about her, I mean...
It's very real.
Yeah. That's Walt Sorg, by the way. Walt Sorg of Lansing City Pulse opening up with that. Was the nomination hers if she wanted it?
I would say so. I mean, I think she was, like Walt said, the most attractive candidate for many reasons, one being that she's so different from Rick Snyder. I think that was a problem earlier on. You know, I think what's really helpful, though, about her announcement yesterday is that unlike when John Cherry announced a couple years ago that he was out of the race, you know, they're still, what, 2 full years out, basically, from the election. So there's a lot of time for the Dems to get together a good qualified candidate. I think the big question is, you know, are the Dems able to get together a good qualified candidate?
First, they got to find a party chairman.
Yeah.
Mickey Hurton, anything to add to that?
Well, I think her reason for not running for governor is the same one she gave for not running for AG. I mean, she really does. She's changed her life in the last few years, and I think it's a reasonable response to what could be a grueling, grueling campaign. I mean, the money that the Chamber of Commerce and other Republican-type organizations will throw to support the governor is going to be extreme. Yeah, tremendous.
Well, and he received a tremendous amount of out-of-state money in his last campaign.
Exactly right. So she's it's going to be a very, very difficult fight. I mean, and you may think that she has a statewide base, but no way, really. I mean, she's a local legislator, and compared with Schuette or Snyder, I mean, people really do have statewide tentacles. I mean, it was going to be a very tough fight. I think that makes it tough who's going to step in, because I don't know.
Well, she's term limited in the 23rd as well. But before we get to that, you alluded to an attorney general possibility here. Are you saying that's still on the table? The Supreme Court's been talked about as well.
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, you know, she kept her options open. But if you're worried about your family and you want to spend time, I'm not sure that running for AG is particularly easier anyway. And Schuette, if he runs again, will just have a ton of money. I mean, he is just he's very much in the very conservative mainstream financial run, and he's got plenty.
Bill Ballinger commented this morning that to make a run for attorney general, though, would not require – you're saying Schuette has got enough money that she would be obliged to go out and raise a lot of money in order to wage a campaign? Because he suggested that the money was less important in the attorney general.
Well, that's why the choice of party chairman is so critical. That's been one of Mark Brewer's major failings, and why a lot of people want him out as chair of the Republican Party, and they're looking to...
Close Dem Party.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Good call.
Yeah, money's not been a problem with the Republicans, but that's been one of the problems. And he also hasn't created the organization, the grassroots organization. You can overcome money. Money's not everything. I think Jennifer Granholm proved that in her reelection when she was outspent, I think, 6-1 or something like that. Plus, she wouldn't be the long slog campaign towards the nomination. She put the word out that I want to be the attorney general candidate. It's over. She's got it. She doesn't have to campaign for it. So it would be a 3-month burst from the convention in August or September until the election.
But doubts about her strength as a gubernatorial candidate?
No.
I don't think there are
any doubts about that.
But again, of a weak field. I mean, there are no heir apparents. I mean, it's just such an odd state. You have two Democratic senators, U.S. senators, and the rest of the table is Republicans.
Well, this is sort of the situation, too. I think, you know, again, what Walt alluded to, the party machinery is so... just in Congress right now, they really aren't firing on all cylinders or any cylinders, and there's not really a tremendous effort to recruit and groom good candidates for office. So instead of seeing more great possibilities coming up from within, we get these possibilities like, well, maybe Gretchen will run. Well, maybe Debbie Stabenow will run. You know, they've got to find somebody.
And look
within.
At the horrible candidates they fielded for Congress.
Right.
I mean, not a serious candidate in this region.
Right. And if you were running for office, would you? Sure. I mean, would you want that behind you? You would have
part
to.
Of, part of the problem with that is the Republicans have helped set the stage too. This state is so tremendously gerrymandered that it's very hard to convince somebody to mount a serious campaign for Congress when you haven't got a prayer of winning. Mike Rogers hasn't had an opponent. A serious opponent since he ran against Diane Byrum the first time when he was elected.
Yeah.
And since then, it's been a cakewalk for him because the district has been so skewed that he can't lose.
But you've got to start somewhere. I mean, if you don't begin with any kind of serious effort, you never get back in the game. And so
your paper, the Lansing State Journal's Scott Davis reported, I mean, he at the top of his list, Schauer, Gary Peters, and Lansing Mayor Virge Brunero. Any comment on those three?
You know, Virge has got a great record to run on. His State of the City, I labeled it Morning in America, in the column I did for City Pulse. But it really was, and it was a recitation of how effective he has been as mayor, given the tremendous financial challenges the city has faced during the 8 years he's been mayor. Dave Hollister points out the city budget today is smaller than when Dave Hollister was mayor a decade ago.
True enough.
And yet the city's got unemployment 2.2% below the state average. It's had some tremendous growth. Admittedly, it's got the four sectors now. You've got auto, university, state, and insurance to build on. But even so, he can run as a very effective mayor. His problem last time was, first of all, a Democrat wasn't going to win in 10. It just was impossible. And secondly, he didn't have a party behind. He had a bad campaign because there was no party support for him because the party was pretty ineffective, and he wasn't prepared to run a statewide campaign.
The LSJ's Scott Davis, again, to get back to your paper, Mickey, referred to the fact that I guess Scott contacted Randy Hannon, pardon me, yesterday, and got some kind of response to the effect that, well, yeah, you might be thinking about this.
Well, Virge is thinking about everything. But I think one of the things that may help him, I mean, I know even our own paper, we were trying to say, can we have a non-political government? Can we have some non-partisanship? Can we work together for constructive solutions to programs? And Snyder presented himself as that candidate. Virge, clearly, you knew where he would be, and it would be more gridlock in the State House. I mean, I think Snyder's lost that mantle of, you know, bipartisan leadership on the right to work. I mean, there are large segments that I hear from regularly now who don't trust him at all and feel betrayed, and that's an opportunity for Bonero.
Lansing City Council President Carol Wood announced yesterday here on Current State that she will not make another run at the mayor's office, and here's how she explained her decision just 24 hours ago right here.
I have a lot on my plate when we look at council and what we have before us this year as president. I believe that you need to be putting all of your energies toward that and making the difference that will make a difference for Lansing right now.
So Carol Wood, not a candidate for mayor. How much, if anything, does this mean?
Well, it's yes and no. I mean, I think she was the easy pick to run again. Obviously, she was not a very good candidate for mayor last time around. I mean, I was with the City Pulse when she announced back in 2009, and the first thing we did was run a phone poll to see how she polled against Virge. And without anything happening, they were at 50-50. So clearly there was some, you know, discontent, at least among our polling group, with Mayor Brunero. But once the campaign started and she got out and about, you know, people preferred her on council. So, you know, unless there's a real last-minute dark horse, you gotta believe that Mayor Brunero's got kind of an easy path to re-election.
Well, his likely opponent is going to be Aileen Robinson from City Council, and she doesn't get a prayer. I don't think anybody could beat Virge right now.
My next question was: is anybody willing to say Brunero's unbeatable?
Well, let's think about something else, though. I mean, that Carol takes herself out of politics, it gives her an opportunity, perhaps, to really dig in as council president. I mean, it takes away a sort of a tension and potential rivalry that was there. The city is going to have really serious issues to deal with. And absent that political dynamic, I'm hopeful that she and the mayor and the council can work together and really forge some creative solutions to some really staggering problems. And I think it's
what's at the top of the list of those staggering problems?
Well, money, Mickey, of course.
Yeah, I mean,
long term, it's short term. I mean, we've got financial issues all over. Even something as basic as cooperating with other communities. I mean, the fact that the council could be less polarized may actually help them consolidate services or find partnerships for
people.
That's
a Brunero thing, though, isn't it? I mean, you know, as far as working with other communities, it's not so much the council, it's the mayor's office, isn't it?
Well, it's the city's reputation and the ability of people to say, well, you have a lucid, coherent government in the city that is working collaboratively on big issues.
But also, to be fair, you know, they the city council most often is kept in the dark about a lot of these things until they happen. There was an effort to consolidate 54A and 54B district courts in East Lansing and Lansing, and the council had no idea it was happening until someone from East Lansing called over. I mean, yes, it is the city's reputation, but also, you know, for better or worse, it's a strong mayor government. This is Verge's city, and he's the one who sets the agenda and makes it go. And without bringing the council in on that, I don't think it's quite accurate to say that, you know, they deserve that much of the blame for it either.
And it's not all in the city either. There's not a lot of desire in the suburban areas, the townships, East Lansing, Mason, to consolidate services because everybody's got their own little fiefdoms. Nobody likes giving up power. That's just a given in any situation, whether it's government or private sector. And they just don't want to. Plus, I think there's some economic considerations. People don't want to be looked on as support as basically helping shore up the city of Lansing. Same
well, they get a free ride. Why wouldn't they take it?
Absolutely.
Look at this. We have an airport that surrounding communities don't support. East Lansing's unbelievable. They don't even want you to use their library. I mean, so this idea of sharing, I mean, and the governor is the one who's been pushing this. And if the legislature would make, you know, better incentives for more sharing, I think that would help.
Why do we have a Lansing Township? I've been wondering that for 40 years.
I know. It's just it's these little duchies. They're not even contiguous. It is ridiculous. And in a normal state or a different state, it would simply be annexed to form a, you know, a rational regional government.
We are talking with the Lansing State Journal editorial page editor Mickey Hurton, Angela Whitrock of MLive, and Walt Sorg of the Lansing City Pulse, and we're reviewing the month of January. Walt, you mentioned the State of the City address and how much that resonated with you. What in particular?
Well, he only devoted two sentences in his speech to the budget crisis, and it is a crisis. Talk with Dave Hollister afterwards. But the way they've set this up, and I got the same vibe from city council members as well as the mayor, is that they're going to talk up the positive and let Hollister and his committee be the heavy. And David's willing to do that because he's got nothing to lose. He's not running for anything. He's got, you know, the only thing he's looking forward to is retirement. He's willing to take the political heat for some very onerous decisions that are going to be made. There was talk of selling the Board of Water and Light, you know, basically eating your seed corn. But that's off the table. The mayor took that off the table. They're going to have to, a combination of more taxes somehow, some way, and there's going to be drastic cuts. The city only does three things: roads, police, fire. That's pretty much all the city does. And there was no mention of the crisis facing the Lansing School District, which is even more serious.
Mickey Hurton?
Well, it is. I mean, they have this team, and they have a lot of pretty smart people on it. And I think we're going to have to take their recommendations very seriously. I don't think that people yet recognize the degree of difficulty the city faces, in part because the city's done a great job. I mean, every year they cut back, and every year for the average person they go, well, nothing's really changed for me. But the day is coming, and I think that's what Hollister and his group will have to show and are going to show.
It's a public hearing tonight at Pattengill, by the way, on the financial health team.
Yeah, I think one of the big problems that is facing the city that's nearly impossible to deal with without some major legislative and union contract changes is retiree health care and pensions. The unfunded liability facing both of the city's pension systems is huge. The city contributes, I think, around $7 million a year into those pension funds, and that's not even for retiree health care. Current retiree health care comes out of the general fund, and it's huge. Last year, I ran the numbers, and I found that on average, from the general fund, the city pays more in benefits and retirement to police and fire than they do in actual salaries. Now, you think about that, there's not much wiggle room there. I mean, we can talk all we want about, you know, rolling over into a 401k, but the reality is until you pay off that $600 million unfunded liability, you can't change the retirement system, so it's not going to be that easy.
Also yesterday, Carol Wood, who has traditionally focused on services to neighborhoods, in contrast to Verge's economic development focus, Carol stressed yesterday here on Current State her ongoing focus on neighborhoods.
the idea of bringing jobs and everything is wonderful, but if you have a workforce that's in our neighborhoods that are buying our houses, that are sending their children to our schools, you will see that retail as well as manufacturing will come because we have a workforce. So we've got a lot of work to deal with in our neighborhoods, especially with the foreclosures, the fact that we've reduced services, and that's made a difference in how the neighborhoods look as you drive through them today.
That got a little squishy, but I think she's making a case for the neighborhood. She's known as the neighborhood outreach person on the Lansing City Council. Response to that?
When I was running for the legislature and I was going to neighborhood association meetings, Carol was always there. I mean, always there.
Oh, yeah.
And she has the reputation amongst the activists in neighborhoods. If you need something done in City Hall, you call Carol. You don't call the mayor's office. You don't call your ward council person. You call Carol, and things get done. And that is her brand. And that has been her focus her entire time in public service as a community organizer and somebody who really focuses on neighborhoods. It was a treat. One other thing I wanted to get to before we get back to that was one thing the mayor didn't mention in his speech, not one word, about state government and what the state has done to the city, how much of the problem has originated across the street from City Hall.
Funding.
Even to the point where Andy Shore and Tom Cochran are sitting in the audience and weren't even introduced. I mean, there was zero mention of state government, which has been a huge part of the problem, and with the personal property tax repeal, it's going to be even bigger.
It is going to be huge, and I think part of that is the tone that Bernero wanted to set. He wanted to showcase the incredible year Lansing's had, and really the incredible couple of years. A lot of the projects he talked about have been in the works for a very long time.
I think we'd be remiss if we didn't at least touch on Right to Work. This segment has flown by. We're almost out of time. But Right to Work continued to be a much discussed topic here this month, and it's not going away. But as much as the landscape has changed, time can soften disputes. Is this one of them, or was there too much blood spilled here? Mickey Hurton?
Well, I think there was too much blood spilled. I think that the sense of betrayal that people feel towards Snyder is real and ongoing. I think even his call yesterday for the Supreme Court to make a ruling in order to short-circuit any legal challenges to the bill, again, reflects their the lack of awareness that there are other views and other people. I mean, it was real interesting. He talked about the success of the ATS, a car built in a union, highly unionized environment in Lansing.
The UAW workers.
Yeah. Right. I mean, they want it both ways, and they can't have it both ways. And I think this Right to Work ruling, this will be the defining measure for Snyder, and because it certainly is for so many people in the state.
We're down to under a minute, unfortunately. Walt Sorg.
I worked in state government for 20 years, 10 years of that in the legislature. The most important thing you have in trying to affect policy is people trusting you. Democrats do not trust Rick Snyder, and that's something he can fix with a state of the state message or fix overnight. He's going to have to earn trust, and it's going to take him a long time if he wants to get anything passed.
Angela Whitrock, why don't you take us out?
Well, I think Right to Work is going to be a huge problem going forward. I think a lot of people are puzzled by Snyder's statement that Right to Work wasn't really about the economy when that was the entire motivation originally to enact it. What we'll really be telling is how the Dems respond and if they can get any momentum and any traction together coming out of it.
And don't you love the way it's now turned into Freedom to Work, not Right to Work. We're
in
Orwellian at every turn in this state.
The Free Beer
it's
and Ice Cream
it.
Act, we yes. call that. The Lansing State Journal's executive editor, Mickey Hurton. Angela Whitrock is with M Live and is a current state contributor. And Walt Sorg writes for City Pulse. Thank you, one and all.
Thank you for having us.
Coming up on the second half of the program, we visit with a recently returned Michigan policeman who just got back from Kandahar, Afghanistan after helping train Afghan police and security. We'll visit with Lieutenant Sean Nelson from Burton, Michigan, Matt Ottinger of WKAR's Quizbusters 2, and our Midwinter Singing Festival, all on the way in the second half of Current State on WKAR.
Support for WKAR is provided by MSU Federal Credit Union, providing credit union members with 24-hour account access online and now on your mobile internet, insured by NCUA. If you have any questions or comments about Current State, you can always email us at currentstate@wkar.org. Or if you'd like to join in on the conversation, follow us on Twitter at @KARCurrentState.
It's Current State here on WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. The Jackson, Michigan-based 303rd Military Police Company just returned earlier this week from in and around Kandahar, Afghanistan, where they spent 9 months training Afghan police. While there, the soldiers, who are mostly from Michigan and other Midwestern states, trained their Afghan counterparts in all manners of community policing. The company also experienced at least one so-called green-on-blue attack last June, in which soldiers in the company, including Platt Weinrich of Henderson, Michigan, not that far from Lansing, were severely injured. And joining us by phone right now from his home in Burton, Michigan, right next to Flint, is a member of the 303rd, Lieutenant Sean Nelson. Welcome home, Lieutenant.
Thank you for having me this morning.
Appreciate it, and we commend your service. How long were you in Afghanistan?
We were there actually on ground for about 9 months.
And you were in Kandahar, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Can you describe that city for us? I mean, people hear about Kandahar all the time. And I think people's common image of it is just a big, teeming Asian city. Is it, or what?
Yes, population is very dense. A lot of civilian vehicle and pedestrian traffic. And during peak times, it takes quite a long time to get from one point to the other just because it's so congested.
You were involved in training Afghan police and security, and I see you were involved in one really curious incident. I think our listeners would find it curious, where several shops were broken into and things were taken, and it was a breaking and entering, basically, a B&E. And this episode apparently helps describe how our idea of policing and the Afghans' idea of policing differ. Can you tell us that story?
Sure. it's really easy for people to, misinterpret Western policing and, policing in the Middle East. Basically, what had occurred with the B&E, the locals were very upset that the Afghan police didn't have any suspects, that they hadn't caught anybody, and so that they complained. And to, appease the elders, if you will, they took the detective, that's his area of responsibility, and they actually detained him at the headquarters as a punishment for, quote-unquote, allowing that to occur in his area of responsibility to appease the locals because they didn't have any suspects. And obviously something like that wouldn't happen in the United States, but that was just one example of how policing there differs from here.
Well, you do hear accounts about how much influence elders in the community have. That pretty much captures it, I guess.
Yes, very much so. I mean, that's more so than the courts. I mean, they do have an established court system, but still traditionally they'll have, the jirga or shura, which is like a gathering of elders to basically any grievances or decision points that need to be made in the villages and whatnot. They trust and respect the elders' decisions, which obviously is a lot different than our form of society.
Did the way that unfolded, did that surprise you at the time then, or did that not surprise you?
Well, I spent quite a bit of time before I actually deployed there. I deployed to Iraq in 2006 as well, so I'm familiar with Iraq and Afghanistan cultures. There are some differences, but there's a lot of similarities as well. So I had done a lot of research and a lot of reading to, familiarize myself with their culture. So it didn't really surprise me something like that happened.
Last year, there were a lot of stories about the so-called green-on-blue attacks where American soldiers were attacked by the Afghans. They were assigned to train in June of last year. A member of your company, Platt Weinrich of Henderson, Michigan, was injured in one of those attacks. How did that incident affect the way you went about doing your job?
Well, I mean, obviously, it makes it difficult for us, or it made it difficult for us, I should say, obviously, because in any kind of relationship, you have to have trust. So that did affect, some of our trust. However, we still have a mission to complete. And I had developed a strong rapport with a police chief that I was partnered with. And because we were working together on a daily basis, because we had developed that rapport, when we sat down and talked after the incident occurred, he expressed his condolences. And basically, I reaffirmed our commitment to them and them to us. And we understood. I mean, I explained it to my soldiers, and I understood that you can't take the actions of a few individuals and apply that to everyone. I mean, you're talking there's thousands of Afghan police, and of that, there's a very small fraction of people that have actually, committed green and blue. And actually, during that attack, there was, several of our soldiers were wounded, but the primary target that day was Afghan police officers, not us. We were secondary. So they suffered casualties. A few other individuals were killed and wounded as well. So we both had losses that day.
Did it add an awful lot of tension, though, to the experience, that one incident? Or was that were you already predisposed to expect something like that?
Well, there was all, I mean, because there had been green and blue attacks before we got there, our level of vigilance and just a situational awareness was heightened anyway, just to be as safe as we could. It basically fell on the leadership after that incident occurred, because it would have been very easy for myself and for our soldiers, especially with us having people wounded, to generalize and clump all the Afghan police into one category. So it was the responsibility of myself and the other leaders in the company to talk to our soldiers, to remind them that, again, this was the act of a few individuals that actually weren't Afghan police. They were infiltrators that committed the attack, dressed in Afghan uniforms. So it was just on us to make sure that our soldiers understood that it wasn't representative of the Afghan police as a whole.
Now that you're back, even for only a few days, Lieutenant, how do you feel about the work you did over there?
I think overall, I said three very simple goals, something like, trying to develop and train the Afghan police to be able to take over security for themselves, cannot be accomplished in a nine-month tour. And it takes several years of development. I understood that before we even went there. And I had set three goals for myself and my platoon. Those were to bring everybody home, which I was able to do. That was the most important thing. Have cultural sensitivity, so that there wouldn't be misunderstandings, to avoid future green and blues, and to make sure that we maintain a strong relationship with our Afghan partners, which we did, and to set up the unit that replaced us for success, basically so there was a level of continuity, so they didn't have to start from scratch. We gave them a really good product so they can continue to work on what we had, the foundation we had established. That's all I could ask for, and because I met those goals for myself and my platoon, it was a success in my eyes.
How does it feel to be back in Burton?
Very good. I've only been home since Saturday afternoon. This is my third deployment, so every time is a little different. Probably the biggest contrast, my last deployment, my wife and I went through together. However, our daughter was just a baby at the time. Now she's 5 and a half, and she's in school. So every time has been a new adjustment, but slowly but surely, I'm getting back into the swing of things.
Sean Nelson is a lieutenant in the Jackson-based 303rd Military Police Company. Earlier this week, he and the rest of his company returned from Afghanistan. Thank you very much, Lieutenant, for taking the time to share your experience with us.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me this morning.
Current state here on WKAR. Well, the top teams are nearing the finals of WKAR-TV's Quizbusters. Quizbusters pits student contestants from mid-Michigan high schools against each other in a contest of knowledge and skill. And Matt Ottinger's been the host of the show since it began in the late 1980s. He's also he's passionate about game shows. He's a huge game show buff, and he's actually appeared on several of them himself, including Jeopardy. And with the competition heating up, we thought it was appropriate to welcome Matt Ottinger into Current State. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Thanks for having me. Let me say, I love the new show.
Congratulations.
You. Having a great time with it.
Thank you. Well, now, for folks who may not have seen Quizbusters, and it's been on the air since the late 1980s, I'm thinking just about everybody's seen Quizbusters.
They have no excuse.
No excuse whatsoever. Just tell us a little bit about the show.
Well, it's a format that goes back to the 50s and 60s, the old College Bowl that some of us are old enough to remember. It's two teams of high school students, four on a team, who answer general knowledge questions about a variety of subjects, show off how much they know and how quickly they can process that they know it. And we have a large field that we start with. We start with 64 schools, and over the course of the season, we whittle them down just like the March Madness tournament in basketball every year. We whittle them down to the championships. And at this point, there are about 8 to 12 teams left.
What's a typical, over the years, you must have gotten some kind of handle on the typical profile of a Quizbusters contestant. Are they the president of the class types or the science guys or
yes,
what?
Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, that's the beauty of it. They are so well-rounded. The students that play Quizbusters aren't necessarily the top grade winners in the class, not necessarily the valedictorians. They obviously have to be smart, but they have to be
well-rounded,
clever and aware. Sure, well-rounded. They have to know what the world around them. So it's not the ones that stay in the library after school and memorize lists of things. Certainly it helps to know the state capitals or the list of the presidents in order, but you need to be able to use your brain. And the only way to learn to use your brain is to get out there in the world. So they're very interesting students. The most fun I have is before and after the show, just talking to the kids in the little time that we have with them, just because I love to find out what they're into.
Yeah. What are they playing for besides the rare opportunity to be on TV?
Well, we say that the Quizbusters are playing for fun, for pride, and then ultimately for prizes. At the very end of the season, the two teams at the end of the season that win their two respective divisions, which are based on class sizes. We have a large school division we call green and a small school we call white. Those two teams will win scholarship offers from Michigan State University, mm-hmm. one-year scholarship offers. The winner of the team, the winner of the competition between those two teams, the grand championship, also win book scholarships from the student bookstore.
And lovely parting gifts?
We have lovely parting gifts along the way as the students appear in the studio and play with us. But we try to de-emphasize the prizes. We emphasize the fun.
Oh, yeah. Have you kept up with any of these kids? Quizbusters goes back to the late 80s. Have you kept up with any of the kids and maybe followed their careers after high school?
Not formally, but what will happen is that I'll be out to dinner or somewhere in the public and some older person will come up to me and say, you might not remember me, but I was on Quizbusters in 1997
that
or something.
That is so cool.
Like that. And there, of course, instantly, I want to know what they're doing. And there are doctors and there are lawyers and there are political people and a variety but uniformly successful people, which is really gratifying to hear. Not that we had anything to do with their success, but the awareness that they have been successful and once played our game, which they'll always remember. It's one of the highlights of their high school career to be on television.
Who could forget terror like that?
Exactly.
Some of them must be absolutely terrified.
Win or lose, we hope that they have a pleasant experience with us. And absolutely, some of them are absolutely terrified. We have some things that we do before the show to try to loosen them up. We've got a great floor director, and he and I have a shtick that we'll do to try to loosen them up. So we hope that by the time they're actually playing the game, they're a little bit more relaxed, but not always.
Have you ever heard of any of them going on to appear on another game show?
Yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Specifically Jeopardy. Several of the students that have been on Quizbusters have gone on to play Jeopardy, and some quite well. Typically, if we find out about them, it's because they were in a teen tournament or a college tournament, something fairly recently. But sure, several of them have.
Now, besides hosting Quizbusters, you've been on several game shows yourself and have a collection of game show memorabilia.
That's right.
Tell us a little bit. What's your foremost appearance, your foremost memory as a contestant?
Well, I think the most recent one was being on Jeopardy myself about 7 years ago. And I think a lot of your listeners will remember when Ken Jennings was running wild on Jeopardy, won something like 75 consecutive games. I was part of that roadkill. I was in the middle of that run of his. I think I was the 15th or 16th opponent that he faced. So obviously I didn't win that game, but it was a marvelous experience. Since I was a little boy and Jeopardy was played for $10 and $20 a question with the old host Art Fleming, I'd been fascinated by Jeopardy. I wanted the chance to do it, so it was a fun thing to do.
And what has Jennings gone on to? Does he still have, do we know?
Sure. He basically is professionally Ken Jennings now. He's playing off his fame.
Oh, okay.
He's an author now. He gives lectures. He's made other television appearances. He's done very well for himself for being a game show contestant.
He's like the Subway sandwich guy.
Pretty
right?
much.
Jared.
He's got one thing he's known for, and he's let's say, milked it.
Branding.
Yes.
We call that branding.
Yes.
We didn't have branding back in the day, but now we do. What is it about the game shows that got you hooked at what sounds like a very young age?
A terribly young age. I was one of that baby boomer generation that television was the babysitter.
I've read about them.
Yeah, I'm sure you've heard of us, yes. Mom and dad, I had great parents. You put me in front of the television, I'm watching television, and in the morning, in the daytime, in the early 60s and 70s, it was game shows. I mean, I was too young to understand soap operas, so it was game shows. The old Concentration.
Oh, yes.
Yes, and Password, and Pyramid, and the original Jeopardy, and all these great old and obscure ones you've never heard of. I would watch them all and love them all. I don't know what it was about them, but I became fascinated with them and have loved them all my life.
And what do you enjoy most about being the host of Quizbusters?
The kids, the students. As I said before, they are so interesting and engaging, and it's fun for me. You can hear it in my voice when I'm doing the game. When they come up with something, when they figure out an answer that really took a really clever turn of the brain, I get really excited when they get something right. That's always fun for me, and the kids are just sensational.
It's funny you should bring up Concentration, because that's the first one for me that
a
I
lot
remember
of us,
really well.
Because when you're a little kid, those pictures are just fascinating. Even if you didn't know what a rebus was and trying to figure out the pictures and making the matches. Making the matches is something little kids could do.
Hugh Downs
was the
host. And plus, when they lifted the card out from the little container there, it always made a little snapping sound. That was really mesmerizing
mechanical little click that everybody who grew up with that show remembers.
And remind us when Quizbusters is on WKAR-TV.
It's on the weekend, Saturdays at 6 and Sundays at 11:30. I should have checked this before I came on. I think that's right.
Matt Ottinger is the host of Quizbusters on WKAR-TV, and they're nearing the end of their season, and the competition is fierce. Thanks for joining us,
Thank you, Mark.
I enjoy singing, but usually my best singing is in the car by myself when I'm going somewhere.
What I like is all of us singing together. It's just incredible.
A few voices from last year's annual Midwinter Singing Festival. The 11th edition of the Lansing Area Tradition takes place this Friday and Saturday at the East Lansing Hanna Community Center. Dan Shinar, Joel Mabus, Kim and Reggie Harris, and many other musicians will be on hand to perform. The focus of the festival is group singing. Everyone in attendance will be invited to join together in song in this community-based performance. Sally Potter's the founder of the Midwinter Sing, and WKAR's Peter Wharf joined Sally in a nearby coffee house to talk about this weekend's event, group singing, and the deceptively challenging job of the song leader.
It's a really hard skill, and most performers can't do it very well. It just takes practice. It's not that they couldn't if they tried.
Why can't they?
The thing they need to do is they need to decide that the songs are the stars of the show. It's not them. They are the facilitator, they're the song leader, but the most important thing is the song. So they start the song, they encourage everybody to sing, and everybody's going to sing, otherwise they wouldn't be there anyway. They pick the key, because somebody has to. They figure out if they're going to strum or finger pick, or if the bass is going to come in, and if there's going to be a fiddle. They figure out the instrumentation of it, who's going to help them out, if anybody. But they really have to just sing it pretty straight. And let the people play with the songs. The people can sing harmony, they can sing the drone all the way through, they can sing the melody. They're just the facilitator. They're just the way to get from point A to point B. But the song is in charge. So the song leaders that come to the festival have to decide what are some great songs we all know, what are some really fun songs to sing, and what are some songs everybody knows the first verse to, but they don't know the second or third verses that are even better and even more better written than the first verse was.
What are some of those songs?
Oh, man.
Tonight, it all began tonight. I saw you and the world.
You know, old show tunes and pop songs and Cole Porter songs and even Motown. There are some verses that never make the 3-minute version. The pop cut of the song, but if you listen to rock and roll stations and they'll play all 7 minutes, you'll hear verses 3, 4, and 5. Well, we'll sing those because sometimes they're the best lyrics in the song. But going all the way back, it's the song that's the star. The songs are the stars of the show, and the song leaders that understand that, the song leaders that understand that the product of this festival is the enjoyment that the people have singing. They have to give it up. They have to give up the energy. They have to put out energy and just give it away and give it away and give it away. And then know that the successful evening will be when the sounds of the songs kind of swell and take up the space of that lovely auditorium, and that leaves everybody smiling.
Is that how you measure a successful evening, a successful event?
I measure it by how many people are either shedding some tears or having goosebumps or both. The song leader for Saturday night, Dan Chouinard, I have watched him lead people in singing up in Minneapolis 3 times. And he is in the same league as Pete Seeger. He is that good.
If I had a hammer, I'd hammer in the morning. I'd hammer in the all over this land.
Suggesting through his body movements and through the atmosphere and the room that it's just time to sing. And of course, everybody who comes to the festival has already decided that they're ready to sing. He is just incredibly good at connecting with the audience, but he connects through the songs, through the presentation of the idea that this is a charming song. And why don't we all sing it together?
When I think of Pete Seeger presenting songs, for instance, the first thing I think of is an effortlessness.
This is just what Dan does. Everything musically he does is effortless. He will play on people's albums. The whole state of Minnesota knows him. Wisconsin, that NPR sort of family, has heard Dan Chouinard in concerts. He's been on Prairie Home. He's on Peter Strusko's albums and Prudence Johnson and Ann Reed, and he's just everybody's either a studio musician or concert musician. He writes musicals. He conducts huge community choirs. But he told me last summer, he said, you know, the thing I'm really loving doing these days is leading people in singing. And I said, great, because we would love you to come and lead us in singing on Saturday night. The common bond is everybody loves to sing. And there are harmonies all over the place. And no one is like judging anybody. No one is wondering if that song was better than the last one. Everybody's just singing because they love to sing.
The Midwinter Sing in East Lansing at the Hanna Center, Friday and Saturday night. Sally Potter, the founder. Thanks very much, Sally.
Thank you.
For Current State, this is Peter Wharf.
Tomorrow on Current State, I hope you can join us. We discuss Michigan's auto no-fault debate. We welcome in Pete Kuhnmensch of the Insurance Institute of Michigan. And on the other side of the issue, it's Butch Hollowell of CPAN, a no-fault insurance advocate. Also, learn about a play about Lansing's historic Urbandale neighborhood. They assembled a lot of the stories of this historic neighborhood, and they've presented them, they put them together in a play. Find out about that. Our producer on Current State is Joe Lindstroth. Our executive producer is Peter Worf. Many thanks to Gary Reed. Aaron Young is our engineer. We'll see you tomorrow. It's Current State. I'm Mark Bayshore. This is WKAR.
Support for WKAR is provided by Douglas J. with two Lansing area salon locations, the Okemos Salon and Spa and the East Lansing Salon inside the East Lansing Marriott, now offering gift cards for Valentine's Day. DouglasJ.com. And by MSU Alumni Association, offering opportunities for networking, career services, and community involvement with MSU alumni in your area and across the country. Alumni.msu.edu.